Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com. We come live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Like every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Albedo. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I am great, Carlos. The only problem is Sunday morning I woke up in Michigan and we had an inch of snow on the ground, and it was snowing when I left up there Sunday afternoon. So I'm glad to be back down south here in Toledo where we don't have any snow on the ground. Hey, Carlos, we got Patrick Reed learned some Harn's lessons this week about the double-edged sword that is the media. The 2014 golf season is winding down with only two events remaining on the LPGA and the European Tour schedules, but the PGA is already five events into the 2015 golf season, and for the first time since September, we are not talking about the Ryder Cup or a task force. Let's go.
What? We do have to talk about the Ryder Cup. There has to be something in it. We'll find something about it. Hey, we have a very good interview, great, with the legendary head professional, Bob Ford, who is arguably the most respected club professional in the U.S. We have a lot to talk about, and let's get it right away started with the Par 5 news, Fred. Hey, what do you have for us to tee off this week?
Well, you know, in the last few weeks, we have seen two very high-profile individuals' reputations damaged due to untimely comments made either on social media or live television. You know, we're all familiar with the ex-president, PGA president Ted Bishop's post of Little Girl made on both Twitter and Facebook in reply to Ian Poulter's comments about Nick Faldo in his new book. Well, feminists felt Bishop's remarks were demeaning to women, and the board of directors of the PGA of America wasted no time in impeaching and expunging his name from the PGA annals. Bishop felt the enormous power Twitter and Facebook can generate when the mass media is alerted to a very meaty bone on which to feast. After he missed a three-foot putt on the 10th hole in the opening round of the WGC HSBC Championship in Shanghai, China on Thursday, Patrick Reed used some very unsavory language that was picked up by some nearby microphones. His use of certain four-letter words and a gay slur showed creativity, but not much sensitivity in today's politically correct world. He since issued an apology for his outburst, but the damage was done. Young athletes are burst onto the spotlight at warp speed. Can anyone ever forget Seattle Seahawk Richard Sherman's ran on live television last year? That has been a big positive for him and garnered media attention and lucrative off-field endorsement contracts. The comments made by Bishop and Reed are having just the opposite effect and are costing them not only millions of dollars, but their reputations. Bishop lost his job and will be forever linked to his regrettable social media faux pas. The damage to Reed's off-field income-generating capability has yet to be determined, but needless to say, most deep-pocket Fortune 500 companies are probably removing Reed's name from their wish list of possible endorsees. Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Tiger Woods earned big checks on the golf course during their careers, but earned far more in endorsement contracts. When Woods was earning $10 million each year in prize money, he was earning $80 million in off-course income. Reed had two wins, four top tens, and earned over $4 million in total prize money in 2014. He was also one of the few bright spots on the Ryder Cup team last September. He flirted with mass media exposure last March when he exclaimed to the world that he was a top five golfer in the world after winning his third PGA Tour title in 8 months at the WGC Cadillac Championship at Doral. Reed became a media darling and seemed to be always good for a printable quote. He was a high-profile celebrity on tour, and endorsement dollars followed. This latest episode is generating quite the opposite. Future endorsement dollars are on the line and currently moving away from Reed at a very rapid pace. He's issued an apology and has public relations experts doing damage control, but the horse is out of the barn, as they say. Young, high-profile athletes need to learn the double-edged sword of media relations when they enter the bright lights and the big checks on the PGA Tour. How can anyone in today's world of smartphone cameras and highly sensitive microphones ever forget that they're always on stage? The LPGA Tour has embraced social media and television exposure. They also have a communications department that trains LPGA Tour members in proper conduct on the course, with the media, and on social media. Evidently, the PGA of America and the PGA Tour could use a little of the forward-thinking policies of the LPGA Tour when it comes to media training for its members, Carlos.
Bring Q School for media, social media for the players. I think they need it.
Absolutely. And even for us old guys.
Yeah. Hey, Fred, I have to talk to you about this. Incredible, you know, to all those haters out there that really say that Rory McIlroy won the race to Dubai without swinging a crop. Oh, come on, I have news for you, man. I can't imagine Rory McIlroy last Monday, yesterday Monday morning, you know, due to the time difference with China, that's why, arriving with a putter and a golf ball, you know, to his lawyer's office, then in the middle of a meeting there to discuss his upcoming case, you know, he would receive an alert on his iPhone. He would stand up, place the golf ball on the carpet in the conference room, then swing at it, you know, going, this is for the Race to Dubai Championship. Yes. And then the lawyer would say, hey, Marty, what the heck is going on? I just won. I just wanted to make sure nobody would say I didn't do a swing.
Visualization.
I could swing all the way to China and still win the Race to Dubai. I really can't assure you that's what happened, but it sounded nice as I played it in my mind, you know, and maybe Rory did it, played somewhat in his. Truth is, Rory McIlroy did win this year's Race to Dubai without hitting a ball. Victories by American Bubba Watson, the WGC HSBC champions at Chishan Sunday, following German Marcel Siem victory across the city a week earlier at the BMW Masters at Lake McLaren, and the fact that Gene Donaldson could only manage a 24th place finish in the China Open in Shanghai, and he's 2,950,000 points behind McIlroy, means he cannot catch him. So that's it. McIlroy's won already with two events to go. And his next appearance following his pullout of Shanghai to prepare for his coming court case against his former management company will be at the season-ending DP World Tour Championship in Dubai, which begins November 20th. The world number one will then fly to Sydney, Australia, to defend his Australian Open title that he snatched so dramatically from Adam Scott a year ago. But there lies another challenge awaiting him. Scott had admitted, after winning the Australian PGA Championship, the PGA Tour of Australasia, and the team portion of the World Cup of Golf back at home in Australia, that it messed up that last hole on the Australian Open and losing to Rory by one shot, it annoyed him for a while. And now he has called on Aussie Open organizers to give him at least a two-day rematch and let him go head-to-head against Rory McIlroy for the opening rounds of the event, which starts November 27th. Fred, we talked about rivalries last week. It would be nice to see Rory fires back now at Adam and urge the organizers to allow it and see the fans' reaction to it. Yes, I want him. Let's do it. One thing is for sure, everyone wants a piece of Rory. At least this one is on the playing field and not the legal field. But
yeah, I got two things from that. One, it'd be nice. Adam's been really quiet for several months. It'd be nice to see him get fired up again and get back winning. And the other thing is, be careful what you wish for. You might just get it. So, you know, Rory will be a little rusty. He'll be a little tough the rest of this year probably. But I'd look out for next year. I look for him to have a big year. If he gets this legal issue settled. I think that's, he's over the top now. I think he's good to go. So, hey, Carlos, moving on to the next subject, Chicago businessman Mike Kaiser has become synonymous with upscale golf development. First, he built Bannon Dunes with a little help from designers Tom Doak, David McKay Kidd, and Bill Kerr and Ben Crenshaw, sculpting 18-hole masterpieces into beautiful oceanside sand dunes that rival anything in the world. Next, he added Barn Bogle Dunes and Lost Farm in the island of Tasmania. You've been to Tasmania, right, Carlos? He then focused his attention on the Nova Scotia coastline and built Cabot Links, followed by another Kerr Crenshaw design, Cabot Cliffs. Currently is working on Sand Valley, which is to become a 54-hole golf mecca near the middle of Wisconsin that will give nearby Herb Kohler's American Club some competition for the central Chicago golf market. Lately, Donald Trump has been making international golf headlines with Scottish and Irish golf properties Turnberry and Dunebeg. Not to be outdone by Dirt Donald, Golf.com reported that Kaiser is in the process of obtaining construction permits from Ireland, gorgeous piece of property on the Inch Strand in southwest Ireland. The proposed golf course is on a peninsula and will be surrounded by the ocean on three sides. It could happen tomorrow, says Kaiser, or it could take years. In fact, Kaiser has yet to acquire the land itself, a parcel owned by a U.S. family named Kennedy. Though it appears to be a mere formality once the go-ahead on the golf course is in place. Kaiser has already been waiting for some time. He first saw the property 10 years ago. It looked like Pacific Dunes, but even better. Big dunes, little dunes, big valleys, little valleys, lots of hillocks define the property. But the most appealing feature is that peninsula with water all the way around it. The Inch Strand sits 30 miles west of Killarney, and their new course will be very near to Doak's Golf Club, one of the Emerald Isle's hidden gems. He has chosen Ireland's Arthur Spring to design the course, a name completely unfamiliar to Americans, yet he has designed more than a dozen courses since 1989 and was a strong enough player to have gained his European Seniors Tour card in 1997. Most importantly to Kaiser is that Spring has had routings done on the property for 20 years and has already had at least one approved that precedes the European Union restrictions about building golf along the coast. Kaiser is confident that they are in compliance with all the relevant EU standards, but he is very aware that a litigant could step forward sooner or later and delay the process further. You know, you got to wish it's easier, but you got to go through all the steps, all the hoops. He's designed courses. He knows what he's doing. When he looks at a good piece of property, he knows what he wants, and he gets the right people in there to do it. Mike Kaiser is one of the best golf course development guys in the world, and I would love to see what he can do with that piece of property in Ireland, Carlos.
I think Matt Ginetta will be one of the first people to go there.
Yeah, we'll hear about it from Ginetta, exactly.
Yeah, it would. Hey, you know, you were too soon to talk about that. We didn't talk about the Ryder Cup. No, I have something for you. You know, last week in an article.
Oh, no.
Yes, golf correspondent James Carrion, he said that, and I quote, the European and U.S. selection panels should give up now and let the players decide who they want as their next Ryder Cup captain. For once, I have to agree. The main reason I agree and would back this, give the players the ultimate power, is that if something goes wrong with that captain's decisions and leadership role, no one but the ones that I have already said are the ultimate responsible for winning or losing the Ryder Cup will have to respond to it. That's the players. To me, it always comes down to the guys inside the ropes, the guys that swing the clubs. Players are the ones who play the game. Of course, that is a moot point. And that is why we keep talking about the Ryder Cup almost 2 months after it's over. And we'll keep talking about it until the next one comes up. Carrion mentions the fact that with the public backing of players such as Rory McIlroy, Luke Donald, Ian Poulter, and a few of the other heavyweights that declared McGinley should be captain, they derailed the ill-advised campaign for Colin McGarry to return. That's how, you know, McGinley became the captain there for winning a European Ryder Cup team. Now the time has come for the new captain to be selected, and we already see a trend on those heavyweights lining up behind who Corrigan calls a shoe-in for the role, and that is Darren Clark. Clark is the odds-on favorite to lead the European side at Hazeltine, although his strained relationship with Victoria's captain Paul McGinley may have a bearing on the selection process. As you might remember, the 46-year-old Clark sent McGinley a letter in 2011 supporting his bid to become captain in 2014, but he later changed his mind and also put himself forward for the role. Now, players like Rory McIlroy, Graham McDowell, Lee Westwood, and Patty Harrington have already stepped up and voiced their backing for the Clark 2016 campaign. Wow, that sounds like a political race. Anyway, another candidate appears to be Thomas Bjorn, who is a highly popular chairman of the Tourist Players Committee, but he believes he can still make the team as a player. McDowell and others think he may be better suited for the 2018 edition in France. Miguel Angel Jimenez, golf's most interesting man, he told AFP recently at Hong Kong Open that he would love to be captain, and some agree he could be a candidate. However, his quest got a surprise dagger when my man, yes, Spain's Sergio Garcia, his compatriot, and
Sergio jumped all over him, man.
Yeah, along with being a vice captain in 2010, he recently expressed that Jimenez's poor English will rule him out of captaincy contention. Come on, Sergio, man. Miguel is golf's most interesting man. He only needs to be in the golf cart with a cup of wine and a cigar and just point out who will be playing. You play. You sit.
You know, whoever you feel like. Whatever you feel. Just go.
It doesn't matter. He's Miguel. Even if he spills the cup of wine, it's Miguel. Everybody will understand him. What's the worst that could happen? That he penalizes someone, makes him do his stretching routine because if he did something wrong? There's nothing wrong with it. Anyway, now, seriously speaking, I concur with Torgan. Clark is a shoe-in for the captaincy in 2016. Filling McGinley's shoes for Clark will make losing the 50 pounds he shed in 13 weeks last winter look easy. But, hey, Clark never meant to shirk a challenge. He's up for the job. Also, players who should rule who will be their captain here in the U.S. and in Europe. Fred, I bet they would sell tickets and televise those meetings, it would be a sellout and ratings success would be higher than LeBron James' decision. Just imagine the debates between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson during those meetings. Bubba getting up and leaving because they wouldn't let him talk. And Patrick Reed, he being Patrick Reed.
I won't say what I'm thinking. I will not say it.
Don't. It'll be unlikely.
You know, talking about M.A.J., Jimenez, you know, it's the old – can you see him riding around a car with a glass of wine and a cigar, you know, going? And, you know, they could be playing Bobby McFerrin's song, Don't Worry, Be Happy, you know. That would be priceless, man. That would – you talk about Ryder Cup history. That would be great stuff. Hey, let's move over to China, Carlos. You know, normally when we talk about rules violations and suspensions or disqualifications, it's due to some 20 handicapper calling into the tournament site to report a rules violation that he has witnessed while lounging on his couch with a cold beverage in his hand. This story's a little different, however. We don't see a lot of dishonesty in golf. Golfers are trained from a very early age that it's a gentleman's pursuit and the sanctity of the golf cart is of utmost importance. The New Zealand Herald reported last week that the leading money earner on the new China PGA Tour has received a 6-month suspension for signing incorrect scorecards. Yes, Carlos, I said scorecards, plural. Zhang Jinjun is banned from competition until March 14th. Zhang is one of two Chinese players who have won in the inaugural PGA Tour China season. Along with three runner-up finishes, he leads the order of merit with 650,000 yen, about $106,000. the top five players earn status next year on the Web.com Tour. We're talking about going right from China to the Web.com here. This guy's leading the money list, and he can't figure out how to fill out his golf cart. Only three tournaments remain on the PGA Tour of China scheduled this year. Any player, wherever they finish on the money list, it's separate from a disciplinary process, said a PGA Tour senior vice president. If they finish fourth, they earn access for being fourth on the money list. It's independent of any disciplinary action. 1 week after the 27-year-old Zhang was disqualified for sending an incorrect scorecard at a tournament in Shanghai earlier in the season, he became the first Chinese player to win on the PGA Tour China when he captured the Beijing Open in June. Zhang again was caught signing an incorrect card 2 months ago at the Cadillac Championship in Beijing. The tour said he made a four on a par three in the first round and signed for a par. Johnson would not say whether the PGA Tour has disciplined Zhang in this case. The tour didn't have to. The China Golf Association is run by the government and controls all Chinese players. It is a partner with the PGA Tour in running the circuit in China, and Johnson said the China Golf Association suspension keeps Zhang from competing on any tour. Along with the PGA Tour China, Zhang has played on the European Tour, won Asia, and the Japan Golf Tour. He's a member of our tour, but as a Chinese player, he answers to the Chinese Golf Association. Johnson would not say whether Zhang faced additional sanctions from the PGA Tour, which does not publicly disclose its disciplinary actions. It's a sticky subject among Chinese golfers in what otherwise has been a successful start for the fledgling tour in China. You know, he really missed some big money events. He would have gotten into the BMW Masters and the WGHSBC Champions the last 2 weeks, because the China Golf Association was guaranteed spots in those. And he would have been the number one on that tour for sure and earned his Web.com Tour card. Other Chinese players kind of refuse to talk about it. They don't want to get involved in any way, shape, or form. Tim Finchin said he did not think the incident would reflect badly on the China Tour or its players. I don't think so. I don't know that, but I assume that. I've been in a lot of meetings the last 2 days, and no one raised it. I think it's an individual thing, Finchin said. You know, Carlos, this confuses me a little bit. You know, aren't the Chinese like mathematical geniuses? Sounds like someone needs a little help with their arithmetic skills. I've always found that I shoot my best scores when using a pencil with an eraser. How about you?
Give them an iPad and put it electronically. So that's it. We have so much technology. Why don't they do it automatically? There should be scores in each hole and just forget about this thing. I don't know. That's just me. Okay, that wraps up our Par 5 news. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have our VIP, very important guest of the week, and that is Bob Ford. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIP, very important guest of the week. And as usual, we have a great interview for you. And this one is with the legendary head professional, Bob Ford, who is arguably the most respected club professional in the U.S. He's not only the head professional at the 110-year-old Oakland Country Club in suburban Pittsburgh, annually ranked as one of America's top 10 courses, but he also is the head professional at Seminole Golf Club in Juno Beach, Florida, another of the nation's classic courses. He has been at Oakmont since 1979 and runs a run that includes five major championships and a U.S. amateur, and will host another U.S. Open in 2016. So, Fred, tell us a little bit about this interview.
You know, Carlos, in the 2 years we've been doing this show, we have had some very special guests on Back Nine Report. Our guest tonight is one of the truly great PGA club professionals of the last 30-plus years. He joined the Oakmont staff as an assistant pro to former U.S. Open champion Lou Worsham and became the head professional in 1979 when Worsham resigned. In 1999, he picked up just a part-time winter gig at historic Seminole in Florida, and he's also qualified for several U.S. Opens and PGA championships along the way. He's liked and respected among his peers and tour professionals alike. It was indeed an honor to be able to talk with Mr. Ford, and we had a great discussion. I think you'll enjoy it.
Let's play it.
We are here today with Bob Ford, who has been the head professional at Oakmont Country Club outside of Pittsburgh since 1979. That's 35 years if you're counting. But it gets fairly cold in Pittsburgh, Bob, in the winter. So you spend quite a bit of time also as the head professional at a little club there near Palm Beach that has been seen a little golf history, Seminole.
Well, I have. I've been awfully lucky, Fred. You know, about 15 years ago, I took this job, and I spent a little over 6 months here and a little under 6 months in Pennsylvania at Oakmont. But it's been a lot of fun. It's been about 15 years. It seems like three. And I hope to keep doing it for a little while.
I understand that you graduated from the University of Tampa in 1975. And you thought about playing professionally, but Lou Worsham, former U.S. Open champion, was the pro there at Oakmont and hired you right out of school.
Well, he did. You know, it's funny. I went down to see him my senior year just to get some advice on how I should, you know, continue to pursue my dream of playing out there. And he said, why don't you come to Pittsburgh this summer and work for me, and I'll find out whether you can play or not. And I said, you mean as an assistant? He said, yeah. He said, my assistant moved on and I need somebody and I'd love to have you. And I was like, oh, my God. I mean, that never crossed my mind. It wasn't why I went there. And I obviously accepted gladly. And holy smokes, here it's been 40 years since I went there.
That's a very good story. You know, I read an article that in 1999, you were playing a little match there at Arnie's place in Bay Hill, and you were 9 under par through 14 holes, and then you quit playing. You didn't finish the round up. Can you give us a little background, a little story on that?
Well, Frey, yeah, actually it was at La Trobe Country Club that he owns up in Western Pennsylvania.
Okay, I thought it was at Bay Hill. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and it was a match play event. It was the pros against the amateurs in Western Pennsylvania. Arnold actually played for the team. It's called the Palmer Cup Matches, and he was on our team. He was in the group ahead of me, and oddly enough, that day, we played there for 10 years or something, and I was walking through the locker room, and I saw his scorecard of 60. It's a par 70 golf course, and I saw it in the locker room and just looked at it and just admired it and went out and played, and lo and behold, everything kept going in that day, and had a couple of par 5s still coming up, but the match was over, and the guy said, well, let's play out. I think you're going to break the course record. And I said, no, Arnold's ahead of us, and you just don't do that. You know, I wouldn't want to do that to Arnold, and he should own the course record. I wanted no part of it, and I didn't think another thing of it, but, you know, a couple guys made a big deal of it, but that's just the way you should handle it.
Yeah, that's very good. That's, you know, Byron Nelson always checked to see what the score was. He didn't want to break the home pros record if you held it, and that's just one of those rules. That's a good one.
Go ahead. I was just going to say the most fun of that day was the fact that Nathan Smith, who has won now 4 U.S. Mid-Ams, and Sean Knapp, who is one of our best players in Western Pennsylvania, were our opponents, and it was fun waxing them like that. So that was victory enough.
you got your good feelings there from that. So that's
exactly
good. You know, you've had some moments playing in you know, you've made the cuts in some U.S. Opens. you are the only club professional other than Claude Harmon to have made the cut at a U.S. Open when it was held in your home course, the 1983 U.S. Open, which was held at Oakmont and won by Larry Nelson. You know, you've also made the cuts in a couple other U.S. Opens. You've played in 10 PGA Championships and made the cuts there. You know, it had to cross your mind from time to time to maybe go out on the tour and try to compete with the boys every once in a while.
Well, it did, and every time that I went out for a week or two, I was reminded of the fact of why I'm not out there and why and how lucky I was to have a real job. No, so I did. You know, I kind of had my cake and eat it too. You know, I got to work, I got to have a home, and spend most of my time at home, and get to play a little bit with those guys and keep my hand in. And it was just a lot of fun to get to walk the walk with those guys and get to know some of them. But I just wasn't good enough, and it certainly wasn't a part-time job, as I found out many times, that those guys are awfully good, and they do it day in and day out all their life, and it's like going into a tank of sharks. You know, they'll chew you up.
Since you've been to clubs that you have been at and you've played on the tour and in the majors, you've obviously played with some of the best players to ever swing a golf club. But who was the best player, the best golfer that you ever played with, whether it be professional or amateur?
Well, Freddie, you know, I'd say that's a pretty tough one. I never got to see Hogan hit a golf ball. Funny, because he won at Oakmont and he spent so much time here at Seminole, but it was after, you know, I was here after he was here. But I did play with Tiger before the 07 Open in Pittsburgh, and I played with Jack a number of times back in the 80s. And, you know, to compare those two with the equipment that each of them played the game with, I think would be unfair. I certainly was in awe of both of them when playing with them, and you know, Jack's phenomenal, and Tiger, the day that I played with him, interestingly enough, this was like in April before the Open, so it was a non-competitive round. It was just for fun. Hank Haney was playing with us, and we got to 18, and Hank sauntered over near me and said, "Bobby, you can't believe it, but this guy doesn't ever play this good when it counts." And I was kind of blown away that his teacher would say something like that, you know, about Tiger. And I certainly watched Tiger like everybody, and you see how crooked at that time he started driving the golf ball. And I'm telling you, that day that we played, he didn't miss the center line one time, and, you know, had seen Oakmont once that morning. I played with him in the afternoon. He played 36 holes that day. And it was a show. It was like a man and a boy playing with Tiger and playing with other guys. I mean, he was that far superior ball striking wise, and I was blown away. But you know, having said that, you know, Jack, 30 years prior to that, he blew me away too. The way he hit the golf ball and just the way he, you know, the confidence that he walked around with was pretty awesome.
Unlike you, Hogan was just a little bit before my time, but I've had the pleasure to watch Mr. Nicklaus and Tiger Woods all the way through, and I feel very lucky to have been able to watch these guys play, because they are pretty much two of the best. Hey, you've had a pretty full career, and I think I read where you recently announced that you were going to maybe retire or slow down a little bit from teaching here at the end of 2015. Is that correct?
Fred, I am. I'm going to retire at Oakmont after the 16 Open. And you know, I'm really looking forward to it. I'll only be 62 at that time. But I think you just got to know when your time's up. And I want to go out while I still want to be there. You know, I still want to be at Oakmont. I still go there every day with a lot of enthusiasm to be there. And I just don't ever want it to get where I'm going there because I have to, and I just think it's time to go and give somebody else the opportunity that I've had for so many years.
What's going to be your new focus here? You got something that's going to take your time? I think you're going to maybe do some kind of a radio show or something you got going?
Well, I am. It's only going to take 1 hour a month of my time, so it's not a a lot of time, but SiriusXM has brought me on to do a Play for Pride show that we're going to interview all the great amateur players that have played the game and talk to them about how they did it and, you know, just all the things that made them great and what they think about and how they walked the walk with the great players and then went back to their jobs. And yeah, it'll be an interesting deal, a little bit about like what you do.
You feel that the amateur golfer has kind of been neglected or overlooked over the past 30 years with the growth of the PGA Tour and all the bright lights and TV cameras that are focused on them. And, you know, the other 20 million golfers in the United States that just play for the fun of it and not a paycheck maybe deserve a little bit more notoriety.
Well, you know, the lure of playing the tour and the amount of money they can make out there is just too great. Just nobody stays amateur anymore. And I think if guys stayed amateur and, you know, they would become famous like the guys that you and I grew up with, you know, the Vinnie Giles and Buddy Muruccis of the world. So I just think that there's hardly anybody left, and all the really, really, really good players end up turning professional today. I don't think it's much of a choice. That'll be one of the questions I ask all these guys, you know, why didn't you? And I think a lot of them have already told me, you know, they just wanted enough money and I thought I could make enough money, you know, doing something else and playing for fun. So I just think it's a sign of the times.
I understand you've got another pet project going, you know, something about the U.S. Caddy Association. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Freddie, I'm really excited about that. I grew up as a caddy and both Oakmont and Seminole, you know, it's 97% walk at both facilities. And so I'm a huge fan of the caddies. The caddy master from RTJ called me this summer, Kurt Seifert. He said, Bob, I want to drive up to see you in Pittsburgh. I've got something I want to run by you. I just need 5 minutes of your time. You're going to say either you're crazy and get out of my office, or you're going to say, you know what, maybe you're onto something. And it was only 5 minutes. I said, you're really onto something. And he started has trademarked the United States Caddy Association. And its mission is to promote, you know, the interest in caddies, the continued use of caddies, and much like the Western Golf Association does with the Evans Scholarship Program. And as such, to bring attention to the association, we're going to host the United States Caddy Open Championship, which is hard to believe that it's never been done. I looked at him in my office. I said, I just can't believe that this hasn't been done yet. It's so long overdue. And, you know, I've talked to, actually, as a matter of fact, today, the Golf Channel, and they're very interested in it. We're going to play it in 2015 around Thanksgiving. And we're going to qualify all next summer and have the sectionals in October. And, you know, I expect we're going to have a field of 120 and play 36 holes for the championship and have a nice purse for the guys and crown the caddy champion of the year.
I really applaud you with that. I think that is absolutely outstanding. We are big promoters of the caddies here. As a matter of fact, one of my pet questions when I'm talking to golf writers or golf people is why aren't caddies in the World Golf Hall of Fame? And even Steve Mona from the World Golf Foundation says, you know, we would take them. We've got a place. If they want to vote them in, we will definitely do that. It's been kicked around, I guess. And I don't think the caddies get enough recognition along the way. And I think this is outstanding. I applaud you wholeheartedly for that.
Well, thanks, Freddie. You know, there is actually a Professionals Caddies Association that was started in Ponte Vedra by one of the guys, and he did start a Caddy Hall of Fame that's not associated with the World Golf Hall of Fame, but because one of our Seminole caddies is in it, one of our Oakmont caddies is in it, is why I know. And they have partnered with the Western Golf Association, actually has taken over the Caddy Hall of Fame, so... You know, we're trying, and I think slowly we'll get the word out. You know, if we can get on television with this caddy open, I think it'll bust the doors loose. And we're trying to talk to Pete Pavacqua, the PGA of America, to do a little Grow the Game initiative and have every golf facility, you know, adopt 2 or 4 or 6 kids to, you know, work there in the summer and caddy and walk with bags and just get everybody, you know, just start slow and just get a couple kids because, as you know, you know, to walk and play golf is the ultimate dream. And, you know, why shouldn't we all do it?
Before I let you go here, I'm going to ask you one more question. I like to ask this of all the pros that we talked to, club pros that have been in a place for a while, especially places like Oakmont and Seminole. What maybe is, I know you've got a million stories that you could tell us, but what is one of the coolest things that you ever witnessed or were a part of at either Oakmont or Seminole in all your years at either place as a pro?
Well, Freddie, you know, I would tell you that both places, simultaneously, both memberships, I think the most astounding thing that I've, you know, that blows me away over all these years is the relationships and the love that our members of both facilities love the assistant pros and the caddies. And what they do for the caddies and the assistants and how they treat them like family is it's very heartwarming, and it's, you know, I think it's one of the great things that I've been able to witness, you know, through all these years. And I mean, down here we have a caddy tournament against another club. You know, we have a team, like 12 guys on a team, that going on about 10 years. And this year, our chairman of the club is going to take the winning team to Augusta to play the Masters. You know, to play at Augusta National in December. So I mean, it's, you know, it's just incredible to the things that they do to take care of the assistants, to move them on and get their jobs, and the caddies and how they treat them. I mean, it's pretty fascinating, and I think that's one of the things that I cherish the most about both jobs.
You got any openings for caddies on that? I may come down there and try to do that.
Yeah.
Just you have to get to Augusta.
Well, my chairman claims that it's easier for him to get somebody in as a member than it is to get somebody in as a caddy, and he's pretty close.
Well, listen, Bob, we certainly want to thank you for taking time to talk to us today, and wish you a lot of luck with the new radio show and with the U.S. Caddy Open, and please keep in touch with us, and we'll talk as we go along.
Great, Fred. Appreciate it. Nice to be with you, pal.
There you have it. That was Bob Ford. And Fred, incredible. I mean, I'm sure that you could have continued speaking with him, with so much knowledgeable person and so many stories that he could have. You could have done the whole show with that interview.
Yeah, I absolutely could. The good part about this is I'm going to try and see him over the winter. We're going to try and get together a little bit. So hopefully I'll get some more of those questions and maybe even tape some more good stories for after the first of the year.
Hopefully we can, and we'll bring it to you as soon as we have it for you. Well, that wraps up our VIG, Very Important Guest of the Week section. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have our practice range. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our practice range. And the theme for this week we'll be talking about the impact of the wraparound season schedule from the PGA, this specifically this time after September until January, and also we'll be talking about the Race to Dubai that it happens right now at this moment. So what's their impact? Is it really worth it? Is it really working? Well, let me start with the PGA Tour's wraparound season, which I am still wrapping my head around it. You know, the calendar reads mid-November, but on the PGA Tour, that just means that the first leg of the season is coming to a close. After five events, the Tour will conduct this week's OHL Classic in Mayakoba as the final tournament before a six-week break. I mean, that is if you don't count Tiger's Hero World Challenge and Greg Norman's Rankling Trumpet Tournament shootout as if something is happening. Okay, the last season looked like it lasted a decade. I mean, it was summer, and I was asking for it. Is it over already? don't get me wrong, it has its merits, okay? After 6 years of post-playoff golf relegated to the Fall Series, last year, good play in October and November is now being rewarded with increased purses. Volpatix got points, allotments, and trips to the Masters for the winners is a good thing for the players. I mean, did you see who won the tournaments last fall? Jimmy Walker, Webb Simpson, Ryan Moore, Dustin Johnson, Chris Kirk, and Harris English. Walker, Moore, and Kirk got off to a great start. That helped Walker land on the top five in the FedEx Cup finale and on the Ryder Cup team. Kirk was what you can consider the runner-up to Simpson for the last spot in the Ryder Cup, and Moore and English got good consideration, although they had no chance. DJ, he's back home with Paulina waiting for the first baby. This year, Sangmun Bae, Ben Martin, Robert Streff, Brian Moore, Nick Taylor, and Bubba Watson. The jury is still out on how Bae, Martin, Streff, and Taylor will pan out this year, with Streff getting the early nod for this year's Jimmy Walker Award. To me, this thing just doesn't work, and neither does the Race to Dubai on the European Tour. Not even the manufacturers and endorsers are still on with it. Equipment companies continue to offer contracts to tour players that run through the calendar year, for now at least. Companies and players have to adapt, however. That's right. Previously, players had a lengthy fall window to test new products from their current company or one they were switching to. Now that window has closed. Look, if it were up to me, I would scratch this whole big schedule and create a world tour combining stops from the PGA Tour and the European Tour. That would be finished by September. Let's be honest. I mean, let's be honest here for a second. Nobody watches golf during football season, so why do they play it? End the season with a great Ryder Cup or President's Cup, and let's get geared up for another great year with a great offseason kicking off then the week one in Hawaii. One big playoff schedule combined could feasibly offer first place more than $15 million or more. It doesn't matter. You just combine them. Enhance then the Web.com Tour and the Challenge Tours to get the regional and developmental aspect of the rest of the players and automatic qualifications for the World Tour. Bring back Q School and then play it in the offseason. I know it would be a tough schedule for traveling, but most of the players, which is all you would have here anyways, fly private anyway. And with more money at stake at each tournament, they could afford it, and even if they don't currently. Fred, I am sure there are a lot of problems with something like this, probably just being the most overused in logistics, but I would love to see that. And really, can we, this thing isn't working right now.
You know, Carlos, I'm supposed to take the pro stance here, but you know what? I can't do it, Carlos. I'm on your side.
Join me, come on.
Yeah, you know, there were some big reasons for this wraparound schedule. First of all, was those five or six tournaments after the Ryder Cup or President's Cup that were played in the old Fall Series needed FedEx Cup points. Well, you know, the season's over, so what good are FedEx Cup points? You know, if you can't spend them. The money's nice, you know, the prize money, but, you know, they needed the FedEx Cup points. So to induce some of the top players to play. Well, so they gave them all FedEx Cup points, credit them to next year, changed the Fall Series to the wraparound, and here's what you got. Now, what you do have is that you boosted purses by a lot. The purses on these things, you've got 37.5 mil up for grabs in seven tournaments. It's 6 weeks, but the WGC, HSBC, and Sanderson's Farms are played the same week, last week. So you got two being played in 1 week. So you've got the Fries with 6 million, Las Vegas with 6.2, the McLadder was 5.6, CIMB was 7. Sanderson Farm was 4, and the WGC HSBC was 8.5. So $37.5 million up for grabs, full FedEx Cup points at all seven events. The other reason for this is you help get some young guys in the field and PGA Tour events trying to earn some prize money at a time when some of the bigger names aren't there. They might be off in Australia or off playing on the Race to Dubai or, you know, going for appearance fees in China or Korea or someplace else. And so, you know, you let some of these younger guys that or some of the guys that are trying to hang on to the tour for a couple more years, give them a chance to earn some prize money. I understand all that. But the real problem is there's just no real definition to the season. You know, Carlos, I'm up here in Toledo, Ohio, and, you know, we have pretty distinct seasons here. It's not like Florida or California. We just got sunshine all the time and, you know, warm weather. You never need more than a sweater. But we get some cold here, and, you know, we got to get out and we got to play our golf when it's time. And when the season's over, you're pretty much done playing outside. But, you know, with the PGA Tour, it's just there's no end to it anymore. It just goes year-round. You know, we're going to see the LPGA wrap up here in a couple weeks. The Champions Tour just wrapped up. We're going to see the European Tour wrap up. You know, they're playing in Turkey this week and then Dubai next week. So they're going to be done. Yeah, there's going to be the Sunshine Tour, the Australasia Tour. And so guys, you know, can go get some appearance fees at some of those places. But, you know, those are funsy events. It's just not like the PGA Tour. And this wraparound season, it's just almost become too much. I really think, you know, you make a good point about this World Golf Tour. You know, there's been rumblings of that for a long time. You know, Greg Norman talked about it, you know, what, 15 years ago or whenever, and that's how the WGCs came about, is to kind of appease that sentiment. You know, there's rumblings about taking the PGA Championship to Asia or internationally, played internationally someplace. You know, I think you're going to end up with some big money guys, some big corporations are going to get together and say, we're going to offer, you know, a $20 million purse or a $15 million purse, and they're going to have 6, 7, 8, 10 events. And they don't care if they're PGA Tour guys, China Tour guys, or whatever. You know, if they're offering that kind of money, the top 50 in the world are going to go play in them. They want that money. That's what it's all about. You know, it's the old saying, if you pay them, they will come. You know, they don't really care what the golf course is like. It could be a blacktop parking lot. If you're going to pay them a couple million dollars to show up, they're going to play. They'll fire up the jet and get over there. So, you know, I really think a World Tour is coming. I think the PGA Tour is maybe hurting itself. I think they need to come up with a more defined season, especially for the top names in the world, Carlos. And that's my feeling, and I'm sticking to it.
And I second that thought, really. The PGA Tour should just see after the season, because if you see, maybe they have some other quasi big names, because they had Dustin Johnson, they had Webb Simpson among the winners there, but they got good because Chris Kirk, Jimmy Walker, and Harris English and Ryan Moore, they did great the rest of the year. But this year, it has already started, like Sangam Bay, I'm not sure he will get it. Still, like I mentioned, the jury's still out. Ben Martin, he's a good player. He was a great player in the Web.com Tour. Robert Streb, I don't know. Those names doesn't ring a bell to the fans, to the common fan. Those names just doesn't pop up like, let me go see golf right now at this stage. So there has to be something done. You can do, I don't know, Rory McIlroy was saying that less is better. You know, he said like he likes the good thing about the NFL. He was comparing it to the NFL. He said 5 months is a good thing. You know, you already know what's gonna happen. The great thing about that sport is that only last 5 months. You know what you're getting. You always want more of it. You know, golf should take note about that. And players are getting very tired. Injuries are happening. Something's got to be done. And the race to Rory McIlroy, with 2 tournaments to go, he's already secured his place on the top. And anyway, on the European Tour, you don't see the big names going there.
they're playing here in the PGA Tour where the old money is, the big money is, and they're not getting there. So reason why it's not even attracting them. Sergio Garcia makes it two, and he was number two starting the race to Dubai. So it's not getting that track. There has to be something done because really it's affecting everyone to me.
Yeah, well, the European Tour, I mean, it has been a year-long tour forever, and they've had to do that. They've had to promote their international structure and a year-long schedule because they had to fit in around the PGA Tour. You know, their purses are only like a third, 30% normally of what the PGA Tour is offering or less. And you know, they only have a 12-tournament requirement to maintain your membership, so If you qualify for the four majors, you qualify for the four WGC events, the Players Tournament. There's nine events right there that are co-sanctioned with the European Tour. You throw in, you know, a couple of the big ones over there on the European Tour, and all of a sudden you're at your 12 tournaments, so you qualify, and you know, if you play in three or four of the final series, you're there. So you know, they can do that. It just, they have to cut back, watch what they play in the United States, and they can't quite play in some of the normal tournaments, maybe. But it's just the way the world is going. It keeps shrinking. It's a smaller and smaller place. You're going to have a tour for the regular guys, much like the regular tour tournaments are today. Then you're going to have the majors, the players, maybe, you know, the Arnold Palmer, the Memorial, maybe a couple other larger tournaments in there. And then you're going to throw in some events in China. You're going to throw in some maybe a one or two big events in Europe. And that's going to be where the big name guys are going to play. And they're going to be playing for $10, $12, $15 million purses every week.
Let's get some big sponsors and do ourselves a world tour. I'm going to propose that. You know, the best thing that I'm waiting for now in this season right now would be the pairing of Billy Horschel and Aaron Poulter at the Franklin Templeton Shootout. I just want to see that. That's worth my time. Okay, I don't care if they win or not. I just want to see them together.
You'd have to wear shades just to look at their outfits, man. It blinds
you.
Yeah,
I mean, it's actually some fashion police or something.
Fashion offense.
Hey, guys, that wraps up our practice range. Right now we have just a couple minutes to go. So, Fred, if you have any final thoughts to talk about, we have about a minute and 40 seconds to go.
Real quickly, Justin Timberlake, you all remember him. He sings a little bit. He's selling his Miramichi golf course for $500,000. It's out near Memphis, taking a big loss. He has put over $16 million into that thing, trying to be all green and a conservationist project. It should be a nice tax write-off for him, save some money to pay Uncle Sam. Adam Scott, of course, we all know Stevie Williams is retiring, so Adam's looking for a new caddy. He said the biggest quality he's looking for is personality. Isn't that what we used to call the ugliest girl at the dance? She has a nice personality, something like that. Luke Donald has gone back to Pat Goss as his coach, moving back away from Chuck Cook. That experiment evidently didn't work that well for him. He had a below-average year last year, 2014, and even missed the Ryder Cup. So he's going back to Pat Goss, his longtime coach there, who was the coach at Northwestern University, which isn't the Big Ten, by the way, Carlos. Patrick Reed, we talked about him earlier. He's got PR people on the scene and trying to correct his problems, but after his off-color remarks, he sought out advice from the wise counsel of Bubba Watson. If I'm looking for wise counsel from somebody, I'm not going to Bubba Watson. Good luck with that. And if you're looking for something really good to read, Jim Nugent has a really nice piece on amateur golfer in the this week's Global Golf Post. Click onto that. Look at it. Good piece.
Well, Back Nine fans, that wraps up another week with the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf, and we thank you for listening to us for the past hour. Special thanks to our VIP, very important guest of the week, the legendary Bob Ford, arguably the most respected club professional in the U.S. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and here on Blog Talk Radio, and also do tune in or download our show on iTunes. If you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.